Tyler and Shay.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Chicago.
Always streaming on the ESPN Chicago app.
Check this out.
Good morning and welcome on in. Tyler Aki, Shay Norling with you until 11 a.m. on ESPN 1000, also on the ESPN Chicago app. Don't forget, you can watch the show on YouTube as well. Subscribe, like, all that fun stuff. That way you know when the latest ESPN Chicago content is out there on YouTube. Shay, good morning to you.
What's up? How we doing?
We've got some football to talk about. Great Super Bowl last weekend. The Chiefs, the champs again. And everyone who was afraid to fade Patrick Mahomes was paid off again.
I got to tell you, too, plus 450, plus 600, something like that, to win next year.
Yeah, they're not the favorite. San Francisco is.
I would just bet the Chiefs every year, I think, at this point. They were like 2 years ago when they won, they were plus 1050. Last year, I think they were plus 450. Now you can get them, plus 600 maybe. Just bet the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl.
It's a nice, early investment because by the time you get into the playoffs, your number is not going to be there. And if you think the Chiefs are going to get into the playoffs, you might as well.
Yeah, right. Because once they get in, apparently, they're just going
to
win.
They've gone back-to-back years now without Tyreek Hill and have found ways to win a Super Bowl.
It really is so much like when the Patriots were at the end. And it was like regular season, they'd have some terrible losses or games where they just didn't look right and all this. And then at the end of the year, they're in the Super Bowl. And that's the Chiefs. It's this year they looked so bad so much of the time. I had them in the dead team walking tier in my power rankings at the start of the playoffs. Couldn't score on red zone drives, all of it. We'll just win the Super Bowl.
I mean, that's what happens when you give Patrick Mahomes a defense, too. You hang around, you let teams linger, and then one team's got 15 on their team and the other one doesn't.
How mad are you at Kyle Shanahan if you're a 49ers fan?
You know,
if you're the owner of the 49ers, how mad are you at Kyle Shanahan?
That was bad. But the way that things shook out in overtime, everyone is harping on that call right there. And yeah, he made the wrong call. But at the end of the day, they went down and kicked a field goal.
He never should have kicked a field goal. Ever.
And that's a fair thing to say, too, because you knew you're going to have to get sixes against Mahomes. But it's not like there was that 4th-and-3, I believe it was in the fourth quarter, kind of late in the fourth quarter, where they could have tied it up and instead went for the touchdown.
It was 13-10, fourth down, they go to George Kittle.
4th-and-3, yeah.
Big time call. And then in overtime, and I'm like, you're on the 9-yard line. You have to go for this.
Yeah, it's...
Man. If you're going to take the ball first, you have to go for it the entire way. Honestly, I was talking to a buddy about this. This might be crazy. When it was third and whatever, and there was the holding penalty on Trent McDuffie, mm-hmm. and Brock Purdy had thrown an incompletion.
It was third and 10.
Everyone thought it was going to be fourth down. Mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody, 4th-and-10 against Patrick Mahomes. I don't care if I'm on my own 20-yard line or wherever you were. I think I'd go.
The one thing about it is that the Chiefs, it wasn't like they were moving the ball free-willing all game. Your defense did come to play. Now, once Dre Greenlaw went out with maybe the most unfortunate injury I've seen in sports history.
Still can't believe that happened.
That right there, timing, the way it happened, all of that. It wasn't like he was being a jackass celebrating something meaningless. No, he was running out onto the field.
To play football. His Achilles just popped. That's so sad.
And you work all year, and to have it just taken from you in that moment was disappointing. But
I'm just going to Twitch chat. Getting the ball first in overtime, still worth it. If both teams score a touchdown, you get the ball back with it being sudden death.
Listen.
Here's the issue. You should never, the second team to get the football, if you get it first, you have to score a touchdown, and I almost think you have to go for two, because that's the only way you're guaranteeing that you get the football back.
Can I say, this is interesting, because the go for two comment came out from the Chiefs after, that was always their plan. They were always going to go for two, no matter what. if they got the ball and got the touchdown and it was a tie game, or you would have technically been down one at that point. How many teams in the NFL go for two?
If they score first or if they score second?
And
everyone should. I don't know that everyone does, but if 32 teams in that scenario, 32 teams should go for two in that scenario.
Because I don't think there's as many that are going for two.
It's a terrible decision to not go for two.
I don't think it's a terrible decision.
I can't give my opponent the football with any score winning the game. I'm a big take the ball second guy because I want to know exactly what I have to do on my possession. I don't want to have to decide between a field goal, touchdown, whatever. I want to know exactly what I need. So if I get a stop on the opening drive, I know I just need a field goal. If I hold them to a field goal, I know I need a touchdown. I got four downs the entire length of the field. If they score a touchdown and kick an extra point, I know touchdown, go for two. I'm winning or losing the game with the football. I'm not giving it to the other team.
So should the team that scores first, let's say the Niners went down and scored a touchdown, should they be the ones going for two?
That's where this is why I wouldn't take the ball first, because obviously
someone has to get the ball first.
Of course, but I'm split on whether or not you should do it if you score first. Because if you try it and you don't get it, then all they need is the extra point and you're dead.
In fairness, they also need a touchdown.
It basically comes down to, if you assume they're going to score a touchdown to match your touchdown, would you rather try for a two-point yourself or try to defend a two-point? Because if you assume they're going for two, then you have a decision. Either we feel more comfortable defending one, or we have to have it because they're going to get it.
It depends who you're playing on the other side. I think that in the case of if you're playing against the Chiefs, so in the Niners situation, if you're playing against the Chiefs, you trust yourself to hold Kansas City with we're talking about potentially the last play of the season. You know they're dialing up the filthiest play that they have in their playbook from 2 yards out. Are you willing to go up against that?
So if you're not, then you have to go for two.
I think, yeah. That's probably the strategy that has to... And again, I'm sure there's some analytics guru out there that is yelling at their radio about this, but I really think that if you do score first, you almost have to go for two.
I don't know.
And this is the funny thing, too.
There is an analytics guy who, runs the numbers and knows, I'd love to hear from you. 312-332-3776. Because the first possession, I'm way more split on what you should be doing. I just know one thing. If you choose to take the ball first, you have to go for it the entire way down the field. If you're playing for possession three, you have to guarantee that possession three happens, which means you have to go and score a touchdown.
I think, too, with a lot of it is matchup contingent. If you're going up against the Chiefs, the situation gets more dire, because if you're only asking Patrick Mahomes to get three, it is goodbye. That'll be all. And I think the other portion of this is that this is a strictly playoff rule as well.
I want it regular season.
But then you have to extend out the regular season clock and all that stuff. The fact that it is a regular or a playoff only rule makes it interesting, because we're not talking about, we're on to Cincinnati the next week. No, you're on to Cancun,
right?
If you don't get this. And that's the, it takes some real stones to make some of these calls and to go out and want to go for two on that first possession or even the second possession.
I just wish we'd see it play out more, because I feel really strongly I told you I'm split on the first possession. The second one, if the first team gets any type of points at all, when you're the Niners, you get 3 points up there, and now Chiefs get the football. I don't care if the Chiefs drive down into field goal range and it's fourth down, go. I am winning or losing the game with the football. I am not giving it back. If I have the ball second in overtime, my goal is for you to never touch it again.
That's fair. I mean, obviously situation matters. If you're in a 4th and 15 or whatever, sometimes you don't go.
Go.
But the situations and all that stuff, it is really interesting. And this is the first time we've seen it play out. Again, that's kind of the thing. You don't get a lot of overtime playoff games. I think since 2010, there's only been a dozen or so.
Yeah.
So you don't get a lot of playoff overtimes. And it's amazing, too. Somehow, the playoff rules always end up with the Chiefs on top. You can change it to whatever you want. That's the team that finds a way to win.
You see, Mahomes said that, too. He was on with Berman, and he was like, yeah, we changed the rules. I don't know how they're going to change them this time. I'm like, that's such a crazy flex.
Yeah.
That's just an insane flex.
I don't think you really need to change them anymore.
They're pretty good now.
To be honest, I didn't have much qualms with the other one. Like, why don't you just keep them out of the end zone? That, like, play defense.
I don't know. I like both teams getting the football.
I'm fine with it. I'm not raging against either side. I'm not someone that needed to see all these changes, but I'm welcome. I'm open to it.
I do think it's still kind of dumb because it's unbalanced. Like, one team can get more possessions than the other, the way they built it out. Why don't we just do college? Why don't we just do college overtime? Make them go 75 yards.
Yes,
Put them on their own 25 and just alternate possessions.
That's the way I would do it. It would be starting at your own 25. And you have to go the full field.
And you can't kick a field goal. No, I'm kidding. You can kick a that would be fun to me. Yeah, no matter what, no punting. Everybody starts on the 25-yard line, alternate possessions until you have a winner.
I'm fine with that.
I don't get why we don't do it.
Yeah. I do think there are better ways to kind of, and I think that, like, I like the college overtime format. I think I would change it a little bit, not make it the 25. I would probably make, in college, make it, like, your own 35 or so, but it is what it is. It's probably not going to be getting changed at any point. I mean, the way that it's kind of been shrunk down as it is right now to, all right, you got then second possession, you got to go for two. Third possession, you're literally just doing two-point conversions.
I hate it. I actually hate it.
Yeah, I don't like the way that the game. I loved when you got the, like, game where the game total went over strictly on the overtime.
LSU and Texas A&M?
I believe, I remember that game was 2018, I want to say. That game was fantastic. I remember I was in Boston during that game, and I think they had, like, someone had Gatorade dumped on them. I think Coach O had Gatorade dumped on them at one point in that game, and then they scored, like, another 60 points after he had Gatorade dumped on them. It was, like, an all-time classic. And it was just back and forth, electric offenses. It was great theater.
74-72, Texas A&M defeats LSU.
Amazing.
43-41 in overtime alone.
Fantastic.
That was
the Burrow team, wasn't it?
That's real football. Yeah, that was Burrow's first year.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
That's real football there. Yeah. That's college basketball.
Right, yeah. It literally was.
74-72.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we'll get into a little bit of Bears because now our focus shifts into the offseason and the Bears have all the headlines. We'll discuss when we come back. Tyler Rocky, Shay Norling on ESPN 1000.
This is Tyler and Shay. Tyler and Shay.
I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Welcome back to Tyler Rocky and Shay Norling. We're back on ESPN Chicago.
It is so cold out, by the way.
Out of nowhere.
I walked out of my house this morning to take the dog out, and it hit me like a brick to the face.
When I was walking over here,
I usually check the weather app. I didn't this morning. Boy, was that a surprise.
The only reason I knew, I checked yesterday. I heard Tracy talking about it, that it was going to be cold today and at the later portions of yesterday. And I know, doesn't weather move moves west, right?
No, east. Northeast. Weather moves northeast, I think.
I thought
I think it moves northeast.
Does it?
Yeah, because I was at Michigan State, I had friends who were from here, and they'd be like, oh, it's raining in Chicago. It'll be raining here in 6 hours.
But I thought it was the other way around, because, like, my buddy lives in Syracuse, New York, and he said, he works for the women's basketball team, lacrosse team, all that stuff, and they were in Miami earlier this week, and he got off of the plane in Syracuse, and he's like, we just went from 75 degrees to 2 degrees. And I think that 2 degrees is what we have now.
No, I don't think that's how it works.
Tracy might be listening. Tracy, if you're listening, text
call
us.
In, text us. Text tell us which way weather
which
moves.
Which way does weather move? I'm not gonna Google it. I'm gonna trust our fine meteorologist over at Channel Stuff.
I know Tracy would not want us using the app. She would want us to listen to the weather people.
And that's how I knew it was gonna be cold.
Good for you. Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks to Cap and Jay Hood Morning Show.
How good is that?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
The best. All right. Let's get into some football here. We've been talking a lot about the Super Bowl, but now the focus shifts to the Chicago Bears after a 7-10 season. You know, it's all about the incremental building of your team. And the Bears, 3-7 wins. Now the next leap is getting into that kind of 10-win territory. But
I don't want to hear the word incremental ever again.
Why not?
I want to win games.
Yeah, but okay, going from 7-10.
I know, but I want to. I don't want incremental improvement anymore. I don't want to. Oh, we're better on the margins. No, I want to be like way better.
I think going from 10 wins next year would be a big success.
Of course, I'm just saying that word. I hate.
You don't like the word choice. Okay,
yeah.
But so there was an article on ESPN.com about some of the predictions for 2024, including the Super Bowl, MVP candidates, all that good stuff. And you'll notice that in the Super Bowl portion, where they're picking who is going to be the matchup, who's going to be the winner, there's a lot of NFC North, a lot of Packers, a lot of Lions, no Bears, no Vikings, and understandably so. No Bears, no Vikings in that group, but the Packers, they took a leap. They look like they have their quarterback of the future in Jordan Love. Jared Goff and the Lions were just one step away. I mean, they were one quarter away from being in this game this season against the Kansas City Chiefs. And you look at what we're expecting. What is success for the Chicago Bears in 2024 is, all right, make the leap now to 10 wins. Get yourself in that 10-win club. But even if you get in that 10-win club, there's no guarantees of the playoffs or anything of the sort. Like, you look at the AFC. It's obviously, it's very tough to have three teams get to 10 wins. We did see it in the AFC North this past season. We saw every single team get above 500. You have to go that the team itself or the division itself has to go bonkers outside of the division. Like, you have to just clean up, because you know that a lot of the games within your division, it's going to be a 1-1 split for the most part. You look inside that division, like the Ravens were the best team in that division. They went 3-3. The Steelers went 5-1 in the division.
How about the Steelers going 5-1?
Bengals went 9-8, but went 1-5 in the division.
I do think that the NFC North, like, if you want to get an idea of what it's going to look like, I think you look at the AFC North. This, to me, has become that kind of beast division in the conference where it's four teams that I think are all going to be good. And Minnesota probably has the best chance to be, like, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I think all four teams are going to be competitive.
Yeah, even if they're bad, they'll be, like, a good bad team.
Like, the Lions, to me, you go 12-5. I thought they would regress and probably miss the playoffs because I thought they were going to lose their coordinators. And by miracle work, they kept both coordinators.
Mm-hmm.
And an offensive coordinator who people deemed the best offensive coordinator in football. So 12-5, and they're going to get better. Like, they're going to add. They have money available. They have draft picks. That should be a 12-5 team again.
Mm-hmm.
The Packers, we saw Jordan Love become like a legitimate top 10-ish quarterback. He was fantastic at the end of the year.
Yeah.
That, to me, is a team that's going to win 10-11 games. And then the Chicago Bears, I expect a team to win 10 or 11 games.
Regardless of the quarterback.
Like, people can't, well, you can't put all that on a rookie quarterback. F you. Sure, I can.
This is a ready-made place that you're dropping into here.
I keep explaining to people, like, everybody's going rookie quarterback taking number one. It's just in the history of the league. It's so rough. And I'm like, dude, you have a chance where, like, if you really get Pittsburgh to get desperate and you flip Fields for the 20th pick in the draft, you didn't earn the number one pick. You didn't earn the best quarterback in football. You got it because Carolina sucked.
Yeah.
You earned the 9th pick. So if you get Caleb Williams, whatever you want to do at 9, I don't know what it's going to be. It sounds like all the receivers are going to be off the board at that point. the three that are interesting, Neighbors, Harrison, then Odunze, sounds like they'll be gone by the time you get to nine. Brock Bowers, who people want, and I got to tell you, I'm not interested. It sounds like he might be gone by the time you get to nine. So maybe you end up with Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, one of the edge rushers, and that kind of is your bookend option. You don't have to spend.
Have you talked yourself into the fact that it's kind of going to be an edge rusher?
I'm starting to feel that way because everybody also keeps talking about let's pay Danielle Hunter. Let's go out, get Danielle Hunter in free agency. I get it. You're going to pay a lot of money for what he's already done as he hits his age 30 season. You're going to put him on the bookend as the pass rusher with Montez Sweat. It's proven that's a good unit like that. But are you going to get the same level of production from Danielle Hunter that he's been doing? Or is he going? Are you going to pay and get the regression? That makes me a little nervous. If you could just take Dallas Turner or Jared Verse or whoever. Medicals scare me. But yeah. Those two I stand out. And then if you get pick 20 from Pittsburgh, hello, Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon, your center.
Right. I think the edge rusher, to me, I would rather attack in the draft as opposed to free agency. And I get Danielle Hunter's fantastic, but I would rather try to attack that in the draft because think about the timelines of everything. You're going to sign a rookie to a four-year deal with a fifth-year team option on him, right? That's just how first-round contracts work. And then right as Montez Sweat just signed a five-year deal. So he'll be up, probably the last contract he'll have in Chicago. And then you'll just kind of replace him with this guy. And then you'll be re-upping Jared Verse or Dallas Turner or Laiatu Latu. You'll just be re-upping them and replacing the money that you had dedicated to Montez Sweat. And it just kind of works. I think it works in a nice little timeline there for you.
Yeah, it kind of creates like you hope that you get Dallas Turner, Jared Verse first round, and they end up developing into that all-pro level talent.
Yeah. So that way when you do wave goodbye to Montez Sweat, it's, for lack of a better phrase, no sweat off your back, like the fact that you can just kind of replace them there.
The other thing, too, and it's something I've actually gotten a little more interested in the more I've talked myself into things, is if you use the pick on an edge rusher, and that's how you choose to address getting a bookend for Sweat, the money that everybody's committing to Danielle Hunter can instead go to Chris Jones.
Interesting.
And then you're like an incredible football team.
Then you have one of the best defensive lines of football.
Like, that's it. You're going to be terrorizing. An amazing football team.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny you bring that up. Like, a lot of people have been fixated on these next team odds that you're seeing on various sports books and stuff like that. The Chiefs are the heavy favorite to land Chris Jones to have Chris Jones on their team next year. I think it's like minus 250 or something like that. And obviously he went out at the parade and was saying stuff too. But the Bears are second. They are the first non-incumbent team on that list. Now, Ryan Poles obviously very familiar with Chris Jones. Chris Jones is a little bit further up there in age, but boy, was he a game wrecker.
He's that old. He's the same age as Danielle Hunter.
Right. No, you're right. But he's still got it in him. Like, he was a game wrecker in the Super Bowl. He was a game wrecker against Buffalo. He made some of those really big plays that we look back on. We're going to look and see from this Chiefs run what they did defensively. Now, all the chips are in the Chiefs' hands right now. If they want Chris Jones, they can get Chris Jones. It's going to mean goodbye L'Jarius Sneed in all likelihood. You're probably not going to franchise tag him just because the money number is so big. I think it's like $32, $33 million, which you don't have the flexibility to really play with there. But if you can find a way to somehow bring Chris Jones up to Hallis Hall, I'm all for that.
Yeah, and obviously we're just dreaming a little bit. But the point is, I think that you can get a rookie quarterback and also turn this team into like a juggernaut-level roster way more quickly than people are acting like you can.
Yeah.
Then part of why I feel that way, like, I want to talk to you about this because we haven't really had this conversation yet. How big of a priority is left tackle, actually? I'm not worried about it at all. I like Braxton Jones. I don't think Braxton Jones is like Rayshon Slater. I don't think he's not Penei Sewell. And I know those guys are on the right side. Mm-hmm. He's not an all-pro tackle. He's not Trent Williams. But
he's good enough.
Right. Why do you need all-pros everywhere all the time? You can get all-pros at other positions. why are we going to spend a premium asset to plug a hole that's not a hole? If Braxton Jones had exactly the same numbers and he got picked in the second round, nobody would be talking about replacing him. I think it's literally just the branding on him, fifth round pick.
Southern Utah.
All of this stuff under a microscope. Every bad snap. And you go, oh, fifth round pick, Southern Utah. You not a big development track there. Dude, I think this kid's good. And I'm not telling you he's a top five tackle. I'm not telling you he's elite. But I'm not racing to replace him with a premium asset.
I think you hit it on the head there, because let's face it, that ninth pick, assuming the Bears don't trade up or down with that ninth pick, if they are indeed picking nine when we get to April, that ninth pick is going to be used on one of three positions. And not just from a need standpoint, it's also just the way that the board kind of falls in given the talent in this year's draft. It's going to be used on an edge rusher, a wide receiver, or a tackle, right? Based on the prospects that are probably going to be there, and stuff like that. When you look at those three positions on the Chicago Bears right now, here's what you're looking at as what you would be replacing. If it's a wide receiver, right now, again, this is without free agency, you'd be replacing Tyler Scott, or at least bumping him further down on the depth chart. If it's an edge rusher, you're bumping down DeMarcus Walker on the depth chart. If it's a tackle, you're moving Braxton Jones to a swing. I think the upgrade that you're getting at receiver or edge rusher is significantly more important to this team's yep. success in 2024 than it would be to upgrade at Braxton Jones.
I also just taking a tackle in the first round in consecutive seasons, nobody does that. It doesn't matter if it's right and left. Nobody does it.
I'm not opposed to that necessarily, but given what the roster is, because you found Braxton Jones in the fifth round, I don't think you need to do that. Listen, is he going to be the left tackle on a Super Bowl winning team? Who knows? I don't know. But it's something that I'm willing to kick down the road to next year. You use a first round pick next year on a left tackle if you need to.
This is kind of related. Trivia question.
Yeah.
How many times last 10 years have the Chiefs selected an offensive lineman in the first round?
I would guess zero.
Yes, zero.
And I'm not
they
saying
haven't
that
done it since they got burned by Eric Fisher, number yeah. one overall.
And listen, I'm not saying that's necessarily the best method to go about it, but when you've got that guy, when you've got number 15 in your huddle, you don't necessarily need everything to be all pro caliber
of course,
around him.
But that's if you're hoping that's what Caleb Williams is. And again, nobody's saying that he's the best quarterback in football. Nobody's saying he's going to jump onto the field and yeah. immediately be Patrick Mahomes or even CJ Stroud. But I keep going back to, if he's half of what he's billed as, you've got a top 15 quarterback.
Listen, he's walking into a better situation than CJ Stroud did.
Yep.
And CJ Stroud took his team 10-7, went to the playoffs, won the division. Like, he's going to be dropped into a better situation.
It's honestly not even close. You are.
This is I'd have to go back, run some numbers, look through everything. This is one of the best situations a first overall pick has ever been dropped into.
I would be surprised if there's a better one. Like, this, you really think about what this roster is. And I had this conversation with a friend about, like, how far away, if you take quarterback and defensive tackle and tight end out of it, where the Chiefs have Hall of Famers at those positions, how different is the Bears roster from the Chiefs roster?
And I was thinking about, let's do this when we come back. 312-332-3776 if you want to join us here as well. Real quick, I do want to squeeze in Bongwater Chad here. What's up, Bongwater Chad?
Shalom, gentlemen.
Shalom.
First of all, I'd like to thank you guys for making my Saturday morning enjoyable. You guys do a great job, so thank you.
Thank you.
And I am no Tracy Butler, but as an amateur meteorologist and a semi-professional storm chaser, I can answer your question. Because of the rotation of the Earth in the Northern Hemisphere, weather moves from west to east.
All right.
Sometimes in a northerly direction. And there you go.
Thank you very much, Chad. You have a good weekend. 312-332-3776. We'll talk some more Bears with you when we come back here on ESPN 1000.
This is Tyler and Shay on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Sports with you here on ESPN 1000. Tyler Aki and Shay Norling with you until 11. And it's Peggy and Dion here on ESPN 1000. All right. We were talking a little bit about the Bears and the Chiefs and the roster of both of those teams. And, you know, you look across some of the positional units. There are a couple areas I would say that the Bears actually have the leg up on the Kansas City Chiefs. I think we'll just start in the receiver room. I think it's pretty clear the Bears have a much better receiving room than the Kansas City Chiefs. They have a bona fide one.
DJ Moore's better than Rashee Rice, mm-hmm. and the rest of them, it's a wash. Like, the rest of them are just guys I don't care about. Marquez Valdes-Scantling versus Darnell Mooney. I'm not going to yell and scream or get in a fight about it.
What's funny, too, is that Darnell Mooney could be on the other end of this equation.
Yeah.
I mean, like, doesn't he seem like, and I know Abdallah's joked about it for a while, but, like, he is a perfect Chief for next year.
Can you imagine if it ends up, like, we're doing this again next year, and it's... The Bears have DJ Moore and, like, Rome Odunze. I'll just throw the name out. And the Chiefs have Rashee Rice and Darnell Mooney. And it's like, oh, we do have a better receiving room. I think the tackles, honestly, I like both the Bears' tackles better than I like both the Chiefs' tackles. The Chiefs' tackles are not good. The interior of their offensive line is good. Like, yeah. I'd take Creed Humphrey. I'd take Joe Tooney. They have... good rotational guards, but
obviously tight end in favor of the Chiefs.
Juwan Taylor's horrible.
He was the most penalized player in football this year.
And he's not good. He doesn't pass block well.
It's holds. It's everything's a mess there.
I remember when he was billed as one of the best tackles in the league, and then you watch him play, and it's like, of course, because he's cheating. He's off the line of scrimmage. He's jumping early all the time, and then finally this year caught up to him. He's getting penalized all the time. He's not good. The other tackle, I can't remember the guy's name, terrible. Like, they don't have good tackles. I would take the... So there you go.
Donovan Smith, their left tackle. Yes,
two out of three, or two out of five on the offensive line I'd give to the Bears. Tight end, I'm taking the Hall of Famers out of it. So tight end, quarterback, defensive tackle, we know.
Yeah.
Edge rusher, like Karlaftis and Sweat?
Sweat. The rest of the line is all Kansas City.
Sure, but on the other end, and then if you add another pass rusher, like if you get Dallas Turner or Jared Verse, suddenly your defensive line is extremely comparable. The Chiefs' defense as a unit is really good, but when you start looking at the individual spots, Legarius Sneed, excellent.
But so is Jalen Johnson.
Right. And now you don't have Trent McDuffie.
You don't.
I gotta tell you. I got a crush on him as a player. He's so good.
Trent McDuffie's fantastic, but like Kyler Gordon is really good too.
Yeah, and their safeties aren't like special.
That's another place that the Bears, obviously the news this week with Eddie Jackson being released, they're going to have to find a new safety. But that's something that, okay, go find it in the third round.
Like, and you have Brisker, which I know Brisker's not a cover guy, really.
Right.
But
Brisker, but you do need that rover safety type of player still. But that's a guy that you find in the third, fourth round
anyway.
Safety, we haven't seen safeties go in the first round. They're kind of like the running back of the defense, where you don't see them go in the first round really anymore.
Especially not a cover safety. Like a guy like Brisker, who's going to... play some coverage, but mostly he's going to be a robber and get involved in the rushing game. Like, he's a run-stopping safety. He'll get down in the box. That kind of guy I could see being more valuable than the guy who's just going to play center field. That's right. Not as big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Or left or right field, since we run a cover two.
Yeah, and you look at the way that the Bears' draft picks are shaping up. Like, who knows? Maybe you get a fifth-round pick also in a trade for Fields. Like a second and a fifth coming your way, and
I just want 20. I'm so invested on just give me 20.
I don't think it's gonna happen, right? Like, I really don't.
What'd you think about the rumor that it could be Kyle Pitts for Fields?
Sign me up.
Yeah, I'd be in.
Yeah,
honestly, I'd rather do that than draft Brock Bowers.
Where do you stand on the Brock Bowers thing?
I'm not drafting him.
I've slowly talked myself into it.
Really?
That if he's there at nine, I'm in.
Really?
Yeah, because he's a receiver.
I know, but...
You're adding a weapon for your quarterback. Think about it. You're putting these two guys on the same timeline. Brock Bowers and Caleb Williams, in all likelihood, with the number one overall pick. You're putting those two guys on the same timeline to grow together. Like, Cole Kmet's not going to be around forever. Cole Kmet's best attribute is blocking and then red zone area. But you're adding another guy who can play from the other 80 yards of the field at a really high level.
Yeah, but it's not like... I struggle with it because if you take Brock Bowers at 9, I think you're not getting a receiver there, which is what I really would prefer.
Trust me, I would take whatever receiver's there over Brock Bowers. I'm with you on that.
I'm a little burned off the recent history of top 10 picks being used on tight ends. Eric Ebron and Kyle Pitts. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like you have a tight end on the roster who was 9th in receiving yards at the position in the NFL, who's making, what, $15 million a year already. Mm-hmm. And as much as we can say Bowers is a receiver, he's not playing the slot or getting split out wide.
He might, yeah.
But not on a meaningful enough number of snaps that I can go, he's really just a wide receiver. He doesn't block at all.
If he's a game changer for you, I'm not against it. Listen, if your options kind of come down to an offensive tackle there or like maybe an edge rusher you're not fully in love with, like let's say Laiatu Latu, right? He's a guy who he's got a medical history. He had to medically retire at one point. He did come back at another point. For me, I have no problems taking Latu, but it does scare me a little bit taking a guy with a sketchy medical history inside the top 10. If we're talking later in the first round or in a later round.
Well, that's because somebody said if Brock Bowers is the best player available at 9, you take Brock Bowers. And I said if Brock Bowers is the best player available at 9, I'm trading down. Because then if I can get down, if I can drop 6-7 spots and I can end up with Jared Verse and then I have an extra pick out of it too, I would much rather go that route. Like going tight end, and again, I get he's a receiver, but taking a tight end on a roster with the holes that this roster has, when you already have a tight end who is effective making $15 million, it just feels like a luxury selection that doesn't make sense.
A pass catcher is different than a tight end. Like I look at this as this team needs offensive weapons right now. Outside of DJ Moore and Cole Kmet, there isn't a ton. You need to add to what you have right now to drop your quarterback into a better situation. And I think that if you go out and add a Brock Bowers, like that is a pass catching weapon who should be good to go for you on day one.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I don't like it. I don't like going to putting that much. I keep saying tight end, and you keep looking like it's not unfair. I feel like it's fair. I do think, like, if you take Bowers.
I think you're just getting too wrapped up, though, in the what's going to be on his T-shirt at the combine. It's going to be tight end and then whatever.
Like, if you're going to run 12 personnel a bunch suddenly, this is going to be an Andy Reid offense with Shane Waldron. We're going to have two tight end sets all over the place. Maybe. I'm not against it.
But if he's not, like, he'll be split out. It's effectively like running with another receiver out there.
I don't buy that he's going to be split out that much.
Really? Because that's a lot of what they did at Georgia.
I know, but it's not Georgia now. Like, I feel like if you take him, you end up in a lot of spots where he's just going to be bumping Kmet down. And I'd rather have Kmet out there chipping edges if we're going to go that route.
I think you can thrive with both of them on the field. We've seen a lot of that in the NFL.
I don't know, man. I can't put that much capital in tight end.
I'm not saying it's my number one priority, but it's something. If I hear Goodell say with the 9th pick, the Bears select Brock Bowers, I'm not going to be upset about it.
Where are you at with trading up? This idea now that you could package Fields in 9 and go to 3 to get Marvin Harrison?
Listen, I don't think you're making that type of leap. But if I am trading up, the only way I would want to trade up is a trade that would involve Justin Fields and the 9th pick. Maybe you throw in like a day.
Yeah, I don't want to give up any other capital because we're bereft for assets right now. Like there's not a lot of picks in this draft.
If there's a day 3 pick or whatever that you have to throw in or like a 4th rounder next year, fine. Whatever. I'm cool with that. But for right now, I'm only moving up if Justin Fields is one of those pieces that's a part of the trade.
Yeah, I'd go get Neighbors, I think, if I had to do it. I would be happy.
Here's
with
the
that.
Thing, though, is that
I'm pretty set right now, and we got 2 months to go still. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty set right now that I either want the luck of getting a wide receiver at 9, but I've come to the conclusion that's not going to
happen. Doesn't seem that way. So you need there to be at the combine. You need the tackles to get a bump. Or like a fourth quarterback emerge.
Yeah.
Like J.J. McCarthy, how good are you?
Yeah, that I think maybe even a fifth quarterback. Like, can we just get a crazy run on quarterbacks at the top? And then, like, the Bears will have their pick of the litter? Because that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I would look at, I do think, like, the quarterbacks, obviously. And who knows, there could be teams that trade up into the top 10 to try to get a quarterback. I just look at the tackles are kind of the guys that are hovering right now in like the anywhere between like an 8 through like 15 range, the three guys. And if two of them can bump their way into the top 10, then I feel like the Bears probably end up with one of the receivers.
We should convince, like, we need to figure out a way to get Kyler Murray to do something stupid so that Arizona will take a quarterback.
Release a Call of Duty.
we need
Activision on the phone, Potsy.
Kyler, get back on the Xbox. We need Kyler Murray to listen. We need Kyler Murray to send a bad tweet. We need Arizona taking a quarterback. We got to find a way to get Kyler Murray to do something dumb.
Well, then,
and then we're all set.
Just get him banned. Just find something.
Go the Jimmy Garoppolo route. Somebody get to Arizona.
What are you going to drug him? Like, what's wrong with you?
We need Arizona to take a quarterback.
I don't think it has to be Arizona. But
if they take a wide receiver, I just think you're out of too many other teams are going to take wide receivers.
You got to hope. I mean, listen, I'm not hell-bent on it being Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm not. But
I'm not either. I'm just saying. I would like one of them. And I feel like if Arizona, if we can get Kyler to do something dumb and Arizona takes a quarterback, then we get one of them.
I've come to the realization on the receivers that Marvin Harrison Jr. is not going to be a Bear. Like I've come to that to grasp that reality probably about a month ago, that he's
Malik
not going to be.
Malik Nabers will look good in blue and brown.
I would love Malik Nabers here. I would love Roma Dunze here. Either one of them, I'm good. You're right. Like, it's gotten to the point now where it's looking less and less likely. We'll take some of your calls. Also, you got a little bit of a beef with something. Yeah. We'll do that when we come back.
This is Tyler and Shay on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
If you want to join us, we'll get to your beef in just a second. First, Mike is in Canada. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Good.
What's up, Mikey?
Good. Like, I just want to preface this conversation quickly here with I do like Justin Fields, but I'm okay with moving on for him. But I've spent the last 6 weeks watching every game that every college game that Caleb Williams has played,
even the Pac-12 network ones. You find those tapes?
Everything that's available.
Okay.
Every single thing that's available. Every single game, because I want to be informed and I want to, you know, not look like an idiot when I'm having a conversation with somebody about it.
So what'd you think, Mikey?
I don't see what. I mean, I see some of what people are seeing, but the fact of the matter is against good teams, he's not good. And he was the 11th ranked quarterback for 2023. He was barely better than Jordan Travis. And if we're going to go to another route, I'd much rather go with Drake May or McCarthy or with Daniels. I think that they have higher upside, and I think it's going to be less drama. And if you guys are, you know, if everybody wants to say that these quarterbacks are being dropped into this wonderful situation that no number one pick is ever getting dropped into, then that goes just as well for them. But the same excuse that everybody is using for Justin Fields as to why he's not been successful in Chicago is the same excuses that everybody's giving Caleb Williams for his poor play this year at USC.
Hold on, because Mike, it wasn't poor play, though. Like, he had a fantastic season.
He was the 11th ranked quarterback this year.
In what metric?
College, in all conferences. That's a fact.
In what metric? 11th ranked?
in yards passed and in five other metrics. You can go look at the stats yourself.
Yeah, but you got to remember this. A lot of those players were also playing 13th and 14th and in some cases a 15th game. He's doing it all in 12.
Okay, that's fine, but he was not good. He wasn't great, and he wasn't generational this year. His Heisman Trophy year, hey, I'll give it to you. He played well. He played really well, well enough to win the Heisman Trophy. But put in under the pressure of the big games, he doesn't show up. And he's emotional, and he hides from media.
Everyone's emotional.
The whole thing that he cried, and people are mad that he cried because he lost a game.
I don't care about him crying. I don't care about him crying. I care more about him not talking to media and trying to live in the Chicago media environment when you won't do it at USC.
Mike, would you rather take Drake May? Have you watched a lot of Drake May?
I've probably watched about 6-7 games. I've been trying to watch as many games of all these quarterbacks as I can. And Drake May's had his ups and downs. I actually like McCarthy and personally and Daniels. I think they all have about the same upside as Caleb Williams.
Well,
I think that
if the passing yardage is such a big thing, though, Mike, JJ McCarthy was 35th in passing yards.
Yeah, yes, but he did. You know what? He played really well in the bowl game. I thought
35th in passing yards with 15 games. Mike, I'm making the point to you. We can cherry pick the rankings, but I don't care Caleb was 11th in passing.
That's why I said Drake May is my first pick.
Mike, he was 12th in passing yards.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was. I'm looking
Jordan
at it right
Travis
now.
Was 12th.
No, Drake May was 12th. It's right in front of me. Drake May was 12th.
Well, I'm looking at PFF and it's Jordan Travis.
I, literally sorted by passing yards. Drake May 12. We're getting in the weeds. I don't want to have an argument about who ranked 12th when I'm looking at it.
Real quick, do you view Marvin Harrison Jr. as like a safe prospect?
I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is actually the only generational player in this draft.
Do you know how many yards he had against Notre Dame this year?
I have no idea, no.
32.
Okay.
That sounds generational to you?
Oh, one game. But everybody goes to Caleb.
Everyone goes to Caleb's Notre Dame game. What about Marvin Harrison Jr.'s Notre Dame game? 32 yards.
Okay. But it wasn't just one game against Notre Dame.
It really was, though.
It really was.
Like, this idea that Caleb had a bad season, I'm sorry. 30 touchdowns to 5 interceptions was a bad season.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
In 12 games? 3,600 yards in 12 games.
You want to know what's funny, too, is everyone brings that up. The funny thing to me is when I see, he took a huge drop off in numbers from 22 to 23. Not really.
Well,
you want to take his first 12 games from both seasons? They're almost comparable.
And also, he had like one of the best seasons ever in 2022.
And he pretty much, listen to this. These are just the first 12 games. So based off of what he won the Heisman on last year, all right, he went up almost 3% in completion percentage this year, threw the ball about 20 less times, and only had 80 less yards. If he threw the ball 20 more times, guess what? He's getting at least 80 yards. He had 34 touchdowns in 22, 30 touchdowns in 23. 3 interceptions in 22, 5 interceptions. So the pick number's up a little bit, but still only 5 interceptions. His passer rating went up 1.5. He had an extra rushing touchdown, and his offense only had 0.7 points per game less.
They were fantastic.
They were unbelievable again.
They were a top, 8 offense in FBS football again?
And the defense, guess what? The defense went from averaging 26 points per game allowed to 35. It's an extra touchdown that you had to make up for.
I think they ranked like 118th in defense out of 133 teams. 118th.
You know what? You know what Caleb Williams' record was when he scored between 27 and 42 points this year? Very good offensive numbers. Like, you should be able to win when you score between 27 and 42 points.
3-4.
0-3. It's ridiculous. He did the work. The other side of the ball didn't.
And he's barely better than Jordan Travis. Okay, well, Jordan Travis was really good. And also on a team that had two first-round receivers, potentially. Keon Coleman's fallen off a bit. But potentially two first-round receivers.
NFL guys, yeah.
An excellent offensive line and maybe the best defense in America.
Yep. 312-332-3776. We'll take more of your calls. Tyler, Aki, Shea, Norling.
This is Tyler and Shea on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.